A few weeks ago in Shul, I spoke about the relationship between Sarah and Avram and their marriage. And I suggested that while on the surface it seems to be there was a lot of conflict and moments of tension and disagreement, I also argued that on a whole, if you take a look at the marriage in general, I think it was a very strong relationship. And we know ultimately it was a loving relationship from last week's Parsha when Sarah dies. Not only does Avram spend a considerable amount of time purchasing a proper burial place for Sarah, but we're told in addition, by Avraham nispod le Sarah, he comes to give to eulogize her, and not only to eulogize her, but also v'lifkosa, but to cry over her. And that emotional response clearly demonstrates that there was this affection and very strong connection between the two. We know, according to Chazal, according to our rabbis, they work together. They they're doing kiruv. Avram is working with the men, and Sarah with the women. They do chesed, kindness together. They travel together. They take this whole journey. And again, there's moments of tension and disagreement. And but that's life. And that's what I try to highlight, that their marriage, I think, is, and what made it successful is that they navigated some very difficult moments. Sarah, an incredible act of I guess altruism and sort of allowing herself to even being set aside. She, she gives Hagar to Avram, and of course that creates its own tension. But again, they navigate those various difficulties along the way, and then looking back at it, that they had a very meaningful, productive, and I would say a loving and relationship where the two of them spoke to one another several times. We see the Torah sharing the dialogue that they had with one another. So that's Avram and Sarah. I like to contrast that with the relationship that's discussed in this week's Parsha, that of Rivka and Yitzchak, which on the surface seems to be one that's for lack of a better word, a lot more dysfunction, and one that seems to be that doesn't work out so well. That there seems to be a disconnect between the two, and we never really see the same type of engagement and dialogue and connectivity, perhaps, that we see between Avram and Sarah. And to and one who I think who I saw who most emphasizes this point is the Netziv in his commentary back in last week's Parsha, when Yitzchak first meets and sees Rivka, as Rivka is being brought back from her homeland from with Eliezer. And told that the pasuk says the following: "Vatomer bateras Yitzchak vatipol me'al gahagamal." Right, Rivka lifts up her eyes, and Yitzchak, we're told, was in the field, lasuch basadeh lifnos arev. According to rabbis, he was davening a mincha in the afternoon. He sees these camels coming. She lifts up her eyes. She sees Yitzchak. She falls off the camel. And she says to the Eved, she says, "Miyaishalazeh, who's this man? Who's this individual? Who's in the field?" Bayomra Eved, who Adoni? He's the one. He's the one who you're gonna marry. Batikachatzifatiskas. And she takes this veil and she covers herself. So, commenting on her covering herself, says the Nitziv, "Mirov pachad." She covered herself out of fear, ubushan, and embarrassment. On some level, she decided, she determined, she assumed she wasn't really worthy of marrying such an individual. Umi, in other words, she didn't grow up, under the tutelage of Avram and Sarah. She was living with her seems to be incompetent a father, Besuel, with her trickster and conniving brother, Alavan. We spoke last week perhaps about the beautiful influence that her grandmother, Milka, may have had on her, as well as the maidservant, Devorah. But, she's living amongst Besuel and Alavan. And all of a sudden she sees this man who clearly is something very spiritual and holy. According to our rabbis, there's also this huge age difference between the two of them. And she senses that she's not really deserving, that there's this major discrepancy between the two of them, some sort of barrier that exists. And the Netziv continues, that she was never, ever develop a relationship with Yitzchak like Sarah developed with Avram. From that point onward, she always had this fear of him. And he continues that, and it was not like the relationship between with Rachel and Yaakov, which also was shaky, but the love that existed between the two of them. Ashir b'yoslam ezek peida leam oshinoi dea los bushel dabir restless neam mishankin rifka. You know, when Rachel just had a problem with Yaakov, and certainly when Sarah disagreed with Avram, they were not afraid to share their thoughts and their opinions, and they were very strong and adamant about their positions. But Rifka. Right, Rivka seems to be never able to express her feelings towards Yitzchak. And certainly the major story in this week's Parsha with how to raise the children of Yaakov and Esav, and clearly her displeasure and disagreement with Yitzchak and his decision to give a bracha to Esav, and Rivka's there, and Rivka unable to communicate her displeasure and unwilling on some level to communicate the prophecy that God shared with her, that the older will so serve the younger, and creating this whole situation where she has to sort of trick her husband with dressing up Yaakov. So Sarah didn't have a problem communicating with Avram, but Rivka clearly did have a problem. The Cholzak Damala Sipor Shiyavo Parshas told us show Yitzchak Rivka Machulk and Medeos. The entire story of in Toldos, we have Yitzchak and Rivka disagreeing in their positions. Mikomakum lo matza Rivka leiv lahamidas Yitzchak. She never had the heart and never had the ability, the strength to openly disagree with Yitzchak. Aldaita b'dvarim nechochim ki hi yodas ha'emes ki Esav rak tzayit b'fiv. She knew that Esav was this hunter, clearly not deserving. B'chein b'shas ha'brachos, and during the time of the blessings that were given, choza yisiba mekadosh baruch hu she'agio ha'brachos li'akov davkan losan ha'ufen k'kai she'yavor b'mkom ha'tamadover. Right, and Hashem sort of had to concoct this whole thing because he knew Rivka was unable to communicate properly with Yitzchak. So the Netziv paints this very gloomy and unromantic and very painful description of this relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka. And we understand, why he paints such a picture, because when you go through the story in this week's Parsha, you just want to shout out, why can't Rivka and Yitzchak just talk to each other? Right? Don't they, we're told right from the start that Yitzchak, loves Esav, Kitzai Befiv, puts hunting in there's hunting in his mouth. Rivka heves es Yaakov. Rivka loves Yaakov, and Rivka receives this nevuah, this prophecy, as we just mentioned a few moments ago, that the older will serve the younger. But nowhere do we ever see that Rivka ever communicates that to Yitzchak, and clearly they have a major disagreement who should receive the bracha. And then even at the end of the parsha, when it's time to send Yaakov away, so Rivka again sort of has to hide, the reality that Esav wants to kill Yaakov, and she sort of just, there's a reason, time for him to get married, he can't marry a local girl, but there's no upfront communication, right? That's what we stress for young couples when they get married, how important it is to communicate, to express one's feelings, to be respectful and to listen and to work together and to compromise. And you just don't see that in this relationship. So that's, I can end the shiur right now, and that's okay. You know, that was it. And again, according to the tziv, it all began right in the beginning. Rivka somehow feels inadequate, somehow feels that she's not deserving. Again, maybe there's this age gap between the two of them, that they grew up in very different environments, and that, you know, Rivka just never maybe felt comfortable, you know, in around Yitzchak with her husband. And she always, you know, did things in a way that was not in partnership with her husband. And Yitzchak, you know, the other way also somehow was unable to, to calm her and to make her feel comfortable. And there's everything unfolds because of that. Okay. So that's clearly on the surface, and that's clearly the approach of the Netziv. But I like to suggest, not to reject totally that approach, but to perhaps just offer another way of looking at things and looking at their relationship. And it begins with trying to understand Rivka. Now, Rivka, again, we know she grows up in this environment where she's, you know, she's exposed to these, you know, to her father and certainly to love on her brother. But we know she's a very strong-willed individual. She is very confident, and she's able on her own to take the initiative. And she's not afraid to speak her mind. And so, for example, the first time that we encounter her in last week's parsha is at the well. And what's so interesting is at the well, right? She's the, you know, Eliezer, you know, turns to Hashem and says, "No, please, no, give me the sign." If, you know, she offers me water, but the way that the story is actually presented in terms of what actually occurs in that initial encounter is the following. Get the exact words. Yeah, the Torah says the following. Right, Eliezer is, you know, finishing his conversation with Hashem. Evine Rivka Yotzeis. Rivka comes out. We're told her lineage. She has this a pitcher on her shoulder. She's very beautiful. The Eved, you know, goes out to greet her. He says, "Please give me a little water." And what does she say? "Of course, right? I'll give you water." And she runs and she gets the water from the well. She gives him water, and then she says, "Not only that, I'm also going to give water to your camels." Now, he didn't ask her to give water to her camels, but she on her own does that, right? She on her own, you know, takes the initiative. And she again, she goes back to the well, and she gives the water to the animals, and then we're told, you know, he asks you, who are you, and she immediately says she runs to her father's household, and she, you know, she's not afraid to engage in a conversation with a strange man. She takes the initiative in terms of, you know, providing for the animals, and she's doing all the work. It's actually interesting. You compare this to other examples of stories at wells. It's usually the men who are doing the work, right? It's Yaakov who sort of saves the day. It's Moshe who saves the day at the well. Here it's Rivka. She's the one who saves the day, right? She's the strong one here in this story. And then it's very interesting, you know, when it comes time to finalizing the deal. So initially, right, the family, Lavan, they want her to stay, right? They don't want her to go back. But what happens? Eliezer insists, no, she has to come back. So what do they do? And this, I think, is fascinating based upon, I think, how things used to operate. You know, usually the daughter she wasn't part of the conversation. Right, it was the father or the brother, if the father wasn't around, who made the shidduch. Right, in ancient times, this is how it worked. Right, it was just, you know, she was not part of the discussion. her opinion was not, they didn't seek her. They just, you know, you made the deal with the other family and that was it. And all of a sudden, in this situation, they turn to her and say, what do you want to do? Right? In other words, it sounds, which I would suggest reflects the fact that she was had a strong personality, that her opinion counted, and that her opinion was very significant. And what's so fascinating is when they do ask her opinion as to what she wants to do, you know, do you want to go? Do you want to stay? So what is her response? I'm going to get the exact words. Vayomru nikron lo na'ara v'nishlas pia, will ask her, vayikru l'rifka vayomru le'a telchim ha'isha zeh, do you want to go or not? And what is her response? Eileth, I will go. You know, she doesn't hesitate. She's not apprehensive, but she's confident. And she, with full conviction, she demonstrates, you know, her desire to take this journey and to join, the family of Avram. So you see a very strong person, right, Rivka, a very strong personality. Now, coming then to the end of the parsha, you know, where the Tziv commented, so he takes it from a very negative perspective. Now, her falling off, covering her face. But I would like to argue that maybe you can look at it from a different angle. And here you see her respect for Yitzchak, right? You see that that she sees someone who she you know, can look up to, someone who she is pleased to and happy to marry, right? It's someone who she's, you know, she can be very domineering at some levels, you know, from based on what we've seen so far. But here she sort of takes a step back, and she's able to recognize the strengths that her husband has, and she's able to value who he is. And we're told when they do get married, again, this is all from last week's parsha. That Yitzchak brings her into the tent of Sarah's mother. And he takes Rivka, and she becomes his wife. And then the key word, and he loves her. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't think you find that with Avram and Sarah, that expression. Right? He cries over her. You see that emotional connection. But to say that he loved her, so clearly there was this bond that the two of them created. So it seems to be this relationship, this marriage that's created, that's one full of respect and love and admiration. Furthermore, as when we begin our this week's parsha, so we're told that unfortunately that Akarai, that she is barren. This is a story that's going to repeat itself with many of the women in Tanakh, of them being barren, of being unable to conceive. But very beautifully, we're introduced to that with the following words, Vayetar Yitzchak LaHashem LeNochach Ishto, that Yitzchak davens for her, right? He prays for her. And Rashi famously tells us that what does it mean, LeNochach Ishto? They're diving together. And they're not standing by side by side. He's in one corner, she's in another corner. Some can take that to mean that there's this distance between them. But I like to suggest that no, that they're praying together. You know, that they're in the same room together. And you know, each one is focused on their own quiet space. But it's sort of like what davening is in general for all of us in the minyan, because we're all in the same room together, but we all have our private shorn esrei, right? You daven as a tzibor. It's always like very interesting. We daven as a tzibor, but as individuals within the context of that greater tzibor, that greater congregation, and that's what seems to be what Rivka and Yitzchak are doing, right? They're each pouring out their hearts to Hashem, but they're doing it in within the same area in proximity to one another, and they feel each other's pain. They're both in this struggle together. And what's interesting is that unlike with with Sarah, with giving like a maidservant to Avram, like here they're working this out together, right? They're going to figure this out together. They're going to make this this happen, and of course, right? So then they're granted she conceives, and we know the story. In addition. We also see the two of them together later on with Esav, right? When Esav, selects wives, and he takes the Torah tells us, "Vahi Esav ben Abraham Shana." Esav is 40 years old. "Vaykachi Shas Yehudis Bas Beiri Achiti Ves Basmas Bas Elon Achiti." He takes these two Hittite women, right? Local, women, which is again against the family tradition. You don't marry the local Canaanite women. So what's the response when he marries these two women? Batiana moras ruach liyitzchak ularivka, right? It's something that is very bitter to both Yitzchak and Rivka. They're on the same page, right? They're not in disagreement. And this is actually just fascinating as a side point. We always wonder, like, what did Yitzchak see in Esav? Clearly, he wasn't totally blindsided by Esav. Clearly, he saw that there were a lot of problems with Esav. We spoke last year about what the positive things he saw in Esav, but clearly, you see that Yitzchak was well aware that he was no tzaddik, his son. But for our purposes, it's together, right? That they both have the same awareness. They both have the same response. They're both jointly in pain based upon this decision that their son Esav has made. There's no distance between the two, right? There's no disagreement here. They are fully on board with this reaction, this response to this action or these actions of Esav. You see that they're together. Then I skipped also one of the other, I think probably the another critical example, one which perhaps you can argue either way, is the following, and that is when they go to Grar, right? And when they go to Grar, and I saw Robert Kelman, you just made the suggestion as well. When they go to Grar to Avimelech, so on the one hand, you seem to see a little lack of communication between the two of them. Because we're told there's a famine in the land, and Yitzchak goes to Avimelech, the Melech Plishim, Gerara. God tells, Yitzchak always repeats what Avram does. That's another fascinating thing, that whenever Yitzchak, many things that Yitzchak does is a repeat, reflects what his father did, which, all speaks about continuity. But when he goes to Avimelech, to the Melech Plishim, so we are... God tells him, don't go down to Egypt, but rather stay here, right? You're being given this this land, and so Yitzchak stays in Gerar, and then now he's in Gerar, so the people, Vayishalu Anshei HaMakom LiIshto, the people are asking about this woman who's with them, and so obviously they're interested in her. Vayomer, and he says, Achosi, she is my sister. Now, here, you see, there is a difference between Yitzchak and Avram, because Avram specifically asked Sarah, he requested that she say that she's my sister. But here you don't see that communication. Right? Avram gets nervous. He's going down to Egypt. He first tells her, by the way, I'm going to be, because again, I think I've also explained in the past, or first explains that in ancient times, people would negotiate. If it was your sister, they would negotiate with you. But if it was your wife, she's already a married woman, the only way to get her is to kill you. So you don't want to say that you're married if you're afraid they're gonna want her. But if you say she's my sister, so that's something hopefully you can negotiate and figure out. So here he doesn't ask her permission. He just says she's my sister. He was afraid to say she's my wife. However, what are we told next? That Avimelech, and this reflects obviously some. the moral behavior on Avimelech's part. Avimelech's Avimelech's a very complicated figure. So on some levels, he seems to be, you know, much better than Paro, but this is clearly an example where he's something significantly lacking with him. That he sort of looks in their private area, and he sees that the two of them, that Yitzchak and Rivka mitzachek, he Yitzchak mitzachek eis Rivka ishto. And the Rashi says, "Shiraso mishamish mitaso." They were intimate with one another. So again, clearly, right? This seems to point to the fact that they have this loving relationship, hopefully with one another, right? That they're intimate with one another, that they're together, even this environment in Grar, which is not the best of places to be. Nonetheless, they still have this connection, this affection for one another. And then finally, just to reinforce, I think, the connection that they have. So the last time we really see the two of them interact with one another is at the end of the Parsha, when Rivka knows that Esav's plans to kill Yaakov, when Esav finds out about, you know, Yaakov taking the brachos. And so Rivka goes to Yitzchak, right? Here we actually see the two of them talking to one another. The Rivka confronts Yitzchak, and she says the following. Tomer Rivka Yitzchak. Rivka says to Yitzchak, Katsi b'chayayim ipnei b'noz ha'ches, im lokech Yaakov isham ipnoz ha'ches, ka'ila ipnoz ha'ores lama lichayet. I can't, they already know what, you know, Esav's decision in marrying, you know, local women. She says, it's going to be terrible. I'm not going to be able to function. I won't be able to live if Yaakov also marries local women. And clearly she's telling him, you know, he's got to go, and he's got to go to the family, and it's, you know, to find a proper shidduch. So here she has no problem communicating, right? With again, she hides things from him. She doesn't tell him the whole picture. She doesn't tell him that that the Esav is trying to kill Yaakov. But at the same time, right, she's not afraid to communicate. And I would suggest this reinforces the opinion, right? You know, like one of the biggest questions in this whole parsha is, why doesn't Rivka communicate better with Yitzchak? Right? Why doesn't she tell him, hey, you know, when I was pregnant, and you know, I was having all these pains and all this trouble. You know, I went to a Lidrosis Hashem to encounter God, and I was told that I'm going to have twins, and that the younger one is you know, the older one is going to serve the younger one. Wouldn't that have solved all the problems had she shared that information? You know, that maybe Yitzchak never would have entertained giving the bracha to Esav, because, you know, and Rivka sort of concocts this whole thing because she knows somehow that of this prophecy, and she can't allow Esav to, you know, to get the brachos. Well, perhaps she's not afraid to communicate with Yitzchak, but one of the rules of Nevuah is that you're only allowed to share the prophecy if you're given permission by God. And maybe for whatever the reason, she was never granted that permission, therefore she had no choice but to keep it quiet. Maybe, perhaps. But clearly, again, you see she's not afraid to communicate, because you see her communicating with him at the end of the Parsha. And I'd like to suggest one more additional point. And it could be also, and this is maybe seeing again Rivka's strength. And not only Rivka's strength, but her deep respect and love and affection for Yitzchak. And maybe she intentionally hides what Esav is up to. And clearly, you know, the fact his hunting and his behavior, and at the end his desire to kill Yaakov, because of her love for Yitzchak, that she doesn't want to cause him so much pain. In other words, she's a strong woman, and she's very assertive, and she knows that she can create this plan to you know, make things all work out. And she can do that successfully without having to hurt her husband in the process. In other words, Yitzchak had, this is again what we spoke about last year, but Yitzchak clearly saw something in Esav that he was enamored by. Esav himself is assertive, very strong, he's a hunter, he's not afraid, and he sees leadership qualities in him, and he's hoping, right, that Esav is going to take a proactive, positive role in the future of the people, which was not a bad, you know, plan on Yitzchak's parts, right? You know, everyone, all our, you know, our children always have different strengths and qualities, and you know, you want to channel their strengths and, you know, to help them then to do great things in life, and you don't, you know, reject one over the other, and you don't discard, you don't you know, that's a terrible thing, you know, to you know, this child I love, that I don't love this child, you know, I'm going to support, that's what I'm not. And so, you know, so Yitzchak, you know, really wants maybe the two of them to both, you know, take a proactive role, each one doing something different. Rivka, though, clearly sees, and again, and Rivka, because she sees it probably because she's grown up with it, right? She can spot a love on from, you know, a mile away, because she's grown up with her brother. So when she has her Esav, she sees the genes have been passed, you know, through her to Esav, and that has been so painful for her, so hurtful for her, but she doesn't want to hurt her husband. And so if she can figure out a way how to make things work out, that everything will turn out all right and not hurt her husband in the process, then that's an act of love, an affection, and something of respect that she does on behalf of Yitzchak. And she's pretty successful at doing it. Right? And again, and even at the end, she never tells her husband that Esav is trying to kill Yaakov. She doesn't want to share that horrible news. Why should he have to hear that and to know about that? Again, normally we encourage communication, and we encourage no secrets. But you know, in this case, you know, perhaps Rivka was warranted, and it made sense, and it wasn't an appropriate response by Rivka. And so I think what it would emerge is, I think, is a much more complex picture about the relationship between the two of them. And there's clearly a lot to celebrate and perhaps to emulate as well. But after all, again, that's what these stories are all about, for us to learn from. And we see this respect that you know, that they have for one another, the love that they have for each other, and you know, each, and perhaps what makes the marriage work is maybe what makes every marriage work, the idea that they're opposites, but that opposites attract, and they're able to you know, the strengths that one have, the other, you know, the other one doesn't, so they're able to you know, each one is able to contribute, but maybe the other one is lacking. We know that's how, you know, all good relationships, you know, friendships and everything will work out. Business, you know, that's what works. You know, when you have two highly competitive individuals and they're working together, so often they butt heads, but different ones have different skills, so they can supplement and they can, you know, reinforce, and they can, you know, one can fill in where the other one, you know, is lacking. So that, again, that makes a successful marriage. And, you know, and the two of them, at the end of the day, they are successful, right? You know, they have the Yaakov who ultimately, you know, continues the family legacy, and ultimately, you know, we all emerge from them. We're all the beneficiaries of what they did, and it wasn't easy, and it was complicated, and it was sometimes you know, messy. But like I said, with Avram Sarah, that's marriage, right? A healthy marriage, a 50, 60, 70 year marriage. It's not going to be smooth sailing all the time. There's going to be a lot of bumps along the way, ups and downs, and confrontation. But the question is, you know, how do you talk to each other? How do you figure out, you know, what works uniquely in your relationship, and how do you allow it to strengthen and to continue to develop over time? And you know, Yitzchak and Rivka, you know, they're confronted with very difficult circumstances, certainly with their children. Certainly in Grar, but they're able to work it out in their own unique way. And you know, sometimes I think it's important to think about, like, what would we do in those situations? You know, not to be so, you know, quick to judge and to condemn and to be critical, but to recognize that these are very you know, not simple, no simple answers in terms of how to handle these things. And again, they're literally creating, you know, this great nation that was promised to Avram and his descendants, and ultimately, you know, they did a pretty good job at the end of the day. I think that their marriage is certainly to learn from it, and also on many levels, I think there's a lot to emulate as well. Okay, I want to wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos and Mitzvah Shabbos to you next week.